Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Richard Skinner, Inspector General at the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. Also joining our conversation from IBM is Dave Abel. Rick, it's understood that the Office of the Inspector General is an independent and objective body that focuses on improving operations. And in fact, you alluded to much of this in the prior segment. Now, I understand that your office recently released its strategic plan for the next 5 years. Could you give us a brief overview of your plan and describe the vision that underlines your office's key strategic goals?
Certainly. I thought it was important to develop a five-year strategic plan. And incidentally, it's something that we update on an annual basis, but nonetheless, it's something that we've developed that would help our staff. And we wanted to communicate a vision for our staff to adopt and follow, and that is to envision ourselves as agents of positive change. This vision is something that we adopted as in the IG community back in 1994, and it's something that I wanted to instill in our people within the IG, Department of Homeland Security. Using that vision, then we can aid and install a sense of responsibility with our staff as far as what their primary mission is in working with the OIG. And we have to remember that we're a support organization and that we are there to help improve the department's operations and its programs. And we want to do that in a very positive way by working with the management of the Department of Homeland Security and working with the Congress and being engaged with them so that we can actually see improvements and be a major player with the department as it struggles to meet its challenges of a new organization.
So my experience with strategic plans has been that they're great when you have a stable environment. But many times there are external factors that sometimes go beyond the control of management and ourselves that could affect your ability to achieve the vision and the plans. What might be some of those external factors that are beyond your control that may impact achievement of your strategic vision and the goals that you've set out?
Actually, I've had firsthand experience in this in my prior lives with FEMA and other departments. The number one thing that we always have to be concerned about is our budget and our resources, because from year to year, we operate on a year-to-year basis. And if at any point in time, because of our economy, because of other priorities, our resources could be cut. And that can have a profound impact on our ability to fulfill the obligation that we've made to the Congress, to the public, and to the Secretary. The second thing that we're seeing, and this has been a trend for the last 10, 15 years in the IG community, and those are the congressional mandates that are being placed upon us. And these are unfunded mandates, and each year they seem to grow and grow and grow. And as those mandates are imposed on our staff and our office, we then are less likely then to be able to focus on those priorities we think that Secretary may have or that we think need to be focused on based on our own experiences there. And the third thing, of course, would be as we evolve as an organization and as we become more mature, better define our vulnerabilities and our future of vulnerabilities and the consequences of those vulnerabilities if we're not addressing them, those change on a year-to-year basis as well. And that can have an impact on what our five-year strategy would be. But that's the whole purpose of having a five-year strategic plan is one to give a broad overview of what we want to do, add value, protect the integrity of the agency, but we have to be flexible as well in order to achieve those goals.
So you mentioned earlier that there's the necessity as the IG to balance the independence that you need to maintain from the organization, an arm's length relationship with the organization, and working very closely together at the same time. In addition to that, you really have dual reporting responsibilities, both to the agency and to Congress. How do you manage the relationship and balance the equilibrium between your responsibility with the department and with Congress?
Sherman Funk, I think, wisely said that it's like straddling a barbed wire fence. The way you do that, and I think it's through communication, and you have to – the department – and that's one of the things I think we were very successful at doing at the Department of Homeland Security, and that's why we've been getting so much support from Secretary Chertoff and his executive team, is they understand what our role is. We articulated that – very early on as to what our responsibilities are and that we do have that dual reporting responsibility. What I've promised them is that there will be no surprises on either side. I would not be going to Congress and communicating with them on issues that I have not have discussed either with the Secretary or his executive team. So there will be no surprises. As a matter of fact, when we issue all of our reports, we issue them in draft, give them an opportunity to become familiar with the report, comment on those, on our conclusions and our recommendations. That gives them also an opportunity, and we include this in our, all of our reports, to issue any rebuttals or any statements that they would like to make. Then when we do issue our final reports, we give those to the Secretary and his executive team first, give them an opportunity to digest that, then we share it with Congress. On the other hand, I have communicated with Congress to let them know what my processes are and laid the ground rules with them. They have to understand that I do report primarily to the Secretary, and I have an obligation to keep him informed because it is his programs that we're referring to here.
So if we explore a little bit deeper the relationship with the department itself, and you mentioned that one of your principles is no surprises, are there other principles that you use and have picked up in your years of experience in the IG's office that you've picked up to be able to manage the relationship with the department and its leadership to be able to help them to fulfill their mission?
Yes, to have an impact and to be listened to, we first of all must be relevant. So we have to know what the issues are. So we have to be engaged with all components, all parts of the department. Secondly, our work has to be competent. It has to go beyond we cannot be second guessed. So we have to deal with the facts. We have to make sure the quality of our work is there so that when we make statements and we draw conclusions, it's based on hard facts. And thirdly, it's very, very important that we be timely. It's senseless to be talking about the past, particularly the Department of Homeland Security, because everything is evolving so fast. There's a sense of urgency because of the nature of the work we do protecting the homeland. So we have to be timely on what we report on. If you use those three guiding principles, I think you can be a very big contributor.
So I would imagine in that process, it can become very difficult to determine what the priorities are on which you should focus to be able to help to improve processes in the department. So I understand that you issue an annual performance plan. Can you elaborate a bit on the plan and the degree to which it lays out a roadmap for your audits and inspections?
First of all, the plan is designed to be consistent with the missions and goals and objectives of the department. It's something that we do not do in a vacuum. We work very, very closely with the Secretary's executive team, his management team, to get their input as exactly what challenges do they see coming down the road. What are the challenges they're living with or working with on a day-to-day basis? Secondly, we reach out to the Congress and OMB. So what are your interests? What are the things that you would like to see us do to help you to draft or craft a legislative agenda? Thirdly, what we do is, of course, we have the statutory, and I alluded to them earlier, the statutory, the mandatory requirements. Those are things that we're required to do by law, so we can't work around those. And then, of course, based on our own experience, I know this is a new department, so we don't have a 10, 15-year history. We can go back and rely on to look at to what the challenges may be or have been or could be. But nonetheless, we do have experience, some very experienced staff that have worked with the legacy agencies before they came into the Department of Homeland Security. So just the knowledge of the programs and activities. So that's why it's important to stay engaged. Then we look at new legislation that may be coming down the pike. Is this something that we can maybe weigh in on by doing special reviews or work? And then finally, there's just we always try to set some room aside to do follow-up on prior work to make sure particularly those things that I think are they're operationally important to see how well the department is implementing our recommendations for corrective action.
Now, Rick, I understand that you're required to undergo yourself an external peer review of your auditing practices. Could you tell us a little bit more about this external peer review? And how did your office perform in the last review? And are there any outstanding recommendations that you're pursuing from these past reviews?
Yes. It's something very similar to an audit. I mean, we subject other people to audits, inspections, and evaluations and reviews. And every 3 years, we are subjected to something similar to an audit. And the purpose of these reviews are to ensure that we're following generally accepted government auditing standards. We refer to it as the GAO Yellow Book or GAGIS. And these reviews are designed to determine whether we're complying with the quality control, that we have a quality control program in place. And we do this every 3 years. And although we could have been waived originally because we had just stood up in 2003, we agreed to go through such a review because I thought it was very important that we be subject ourselves to this review to see where we're at, because we brought together seven different IGs, seven different cultures, seven different policies, procedures, and ways of doing business. And that review was completed at the end of 2005. The peer review concluded in our case that we were, in fact, compliant with GAGIS. They did, however, make recommendations in areas where we can improve. One primarily is in the area of communication, making sure all the staff understood what our guidelines were. Also, that we could have done a better job in some areas of documenting our work, but all in all, did not have a significant impact on any of our work, those type of deficiencies. Currently, we have addressed all those issues. As a matter of fact, I've gone one step further. That is that I've hired a contractor, a CPA firm, to do quality control reviews year in, year out. I prefer to use someone that is outside our office.
Now, going back to something that you mentioned earlier, I would imagine that your office makes many recommendations during the course of a year. So how do you monitor and follow up on the status of those recommendations? And is there a formal process you follow to assess the implementation of the recommendations that you make?
Yes, there is. And this was a big challenge for us, because when we stood up back in 2003 and we brought seven different IGs with us and we brought with them their outstanding reports, we had over 1,000 recommendations that were outstanding from the legacy agencies, from the legacy IGs. The first thing we did, of course, was to do an inventory of what recommendations were open. Then we did an assessment of each of those recommendations, determined if they were still germane. As a result of the reorganization, a lot of those recommendations no longer had value. Well, up until this year, we were tracking everything manually, which was very labor-intensive. And effective this year, now we have automated that process, and we work closely with the department because they do rely now on our systems to advise them as to what is open. We have a very robust recommendation follow-up process within the Department of Homeland Security, and a very successful one. It's something the department takes very seriously. All the components have an IG liaison that's responsible for tracking all recommendations made within their individual components. And our tracking system allows us to periodically identify and go back to these audit liaisons and get progress reports of how things are going. What we do is when we issue a draft report, that gives the department an opportunity to see what our recommendations are going to be and comment on those recommendations so we can make sure that we are on target with what our conclusions are. Then we issue our final report. That then goes into our automated system. From there, we ask that the department, within 90 days, tell us exactly what they plan to do and when they plan to do it and how they plan to do that. And that stays in our tracking system. Then we periodically, if need be, send out notices asking for updates. Then depending on the nature of the recommendation, if it's something that's really profound or has a significant impact on our ability to carry out our mission or perform our work, we will actually go in and do follow-up reviews. So at any point in time, anyone could call and we could tell you the status of any recommendation we've made since we stood up.
Great. What are some of the key management challenges facing DHS? We will ask Richard Skinner, Inspector General of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.